Six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station.
And welcome to this Monday edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host, John Quinlan. Very special show awaiting us here in a month when we're celebrating the third anniversary of the protests at the Wisconsin Capitol. And my guests for the full hour here in studio are Representative Melissa Sargent and State Senator Mark Miller. Melissa, hey Mark, welcome to Public Affair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And as we go into this hour, and it's an hour I'm sure that will evoke many memories for many of our listeners, I want to just bring in a little bit of the spirit of that time, that still lives on in really significant ways. That's one of the themes we're going to be exploring. What was the significance of that time? How does it still live on? What is the task, the road ahead? But before we do that, we want to just remember one of the groups of folks that have stayed in there, persevered over the years, and those are the folks at the Solidarity Sing-Along. And once again, the Solidarity Sing-Along, evoking some smiles from my guests, understandably. Melissa, can you think back to 3 years? Where were you at that time? How did you find out about things? How did you get involved in the protest at the Capitol?
So I remember I was taking my kids out to breakfast on a Saturday morning and saw a headline in the paper, in the newspaper box, that pretty much said Walker was dropping the bomb the following Monday and not negotiating with the unions anymore, and felt like the rug was being pulled out from under my feet. And that next day, that Sunday, I, with a couple other hardy souls, found myself marching in front of the governor's mansion. Not that he spends much time there, but we didn't know that at the time. And it was an eerily warm Sunday, as I recall. And that was the beginning for me.
Mark Miller, can you remember kind of where all this hit when you realized something big was happening?
Well, it was a bomb, because the governor had not indicated during his campaign that he was going to strip away the rights of public employee unions, but instead he had said that he wanted them to pay more for their benefits, a greater share of their benefits. So this came as a complete surprise. The legislation, I believe, was introduced on a Thursday. And the following Thursday is when the Senate was being asked to vote on it. There was a real prompt response from the TAA, came down and provided Valentines to the governor's office, asking for a little bit of love. And in terms of the legislation, sort of an initial protest, and there started to be some small protests in the Capitol. The Finance Committee scheduled a public hearing on the bill because it was a fiscal bill, required a public hearing, but they cut it short while there were still probably over 100 people wanting to testify. And the Democratic members of Finance and others decided to keep the meeting open so everybody have a chance to testify, and that actually ended up lasting for weeks, that public testimony. I sat there through the night with the other members, and in the morning called Kathleen Weinhout, who is a farmer, and I knew she would be up at the crack of dawn, if not earlier, and she came over and helped out. And then on the day that we were scheduled to vote on the bill, because it had just come up really quickly, But the number of protests had grown in the from a few thousand to a few tens of thousands, and I called the night before we were scheduled to vote and asked all the members to bring a change of clothes in case we decided to deny a fiscal quorum. And when we got together that morning of the scheduled vote, all the members that were there in our caucus decided that we needed to deny a fiscal quorum because this had come upon as a surprise. And within half an hour of that time, we were on our way to get out of Madison, and we had ended up heading toward northern Illinois, where we would be we would be able to decide when we came back. So that's what happened. And from the accounts that I've heard is that the news that the Senate had left was electrifying back here in Madison.
Yeah. Melissa, what was your reaction at the
time?
Well,
I was... So from that first Sunday that I marched in front of the governor's mansion, I didn't miss a day marching around the Capitol for many months, actually.
And we should just point out, you weren't representative of Melissa Sargent then. You were on the county board, but that was...
I was mom and lifetime resident of Madison and Dane County and true blue Wisconsinite, and knew that what was happening wasn't the way politics in my state has historically been done. I mean, we've had red governors and blue governors, but we've had governors who historically listen to the people and govern in the best interest of the people. And in fact, the message that was being delivered was that the folks that were here were piped in from out of state on buses.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I saw my teachers, my son's teachers. I saw my aunt and my cousins and my neighbors. And in fact, these were not people from out of state. And the day that the school was canceled, so many of these days I had four kids. One of them wasn't walking yet or talking. He was strapped in into his carrier, but negotiating the crowds with four kids is the same time the mass media is saying that it was highly dangerous, and my kids were perfectly safe. It was a real sense of community, and to be in the Capitol and have the wave of knowledge move through the crowds when it became a known fact that the senators were in cars and driving for the border, and people just hoping for the best, and are the state patrol going to follow them, and are they going to try to put a roadblock up at the state line, and are they going to stay on the interstate, or are they going to take a back road to get over into Illinois, and just all the trajectory and communication and hope that was going through the Capitol building inside and out at that point in time, and knowing what sacrifice was being made by these senators who were just throwing their Hail Mary because they care about the state so much, too. It was stunning.
I'm jumping ahead a bit in the narrative, but as you talk about your children, just remember reading your thoughts on Facebook about the significance of these events for them and the educable moment that this represented. Could you reflect on that a bit?
Well, I don't think my kids' lives will ever be the same, and I think it's for the better. My older kids definitely, they're 16 and 13 now. We just had a birthday. So I'm practicing saying 16.
You couldn't possibly have a 16-year-old.
I can't. I'm 19 or something myself, so I'm not sure how it works. They made signs. It changed their lives. It changed my life. Yeah. I never imagined that I would run for office. My baby learned to walk in the Capitol. His first word was "Recall Walker." He thought that was one word. He wouldn't take a nap unless we went to the sing-along and he could hear the people singing in the Capitol. That's the only time he would actually fall asleep. It was hard, I think, on my 8-year-old. He was five and six at the time, and he's a bit more private, doesn't like the crowds, and it was a stretch on him, but I don't think he looks back at it as painful. But my older boys, they understand how government works, and they will forever know how it works.
Mark, you've been around, you've seen a lot of governments come and go, and I'm sure share of social protests and things. But I was reflecting back, I think the conversations I was having maybe a year or two before all of this came down, And I remember one conversation, again, it was on Facebook, I think, where folks were lamenting the fact that people don't show up for protests anymore. It's all social media, or people don't, you know, this, you know, it is, you know, what's happened to us? We've lost our idealism. We've lost our ability to get out there and stand up for what we believe in. So when this came down, did that change, you know, was that out of the blue for you? Was that a perception, or was that something you think has been building for a long time? Where did it come from?
Well, John, you and I are both of a certain age where we can remember the Vietnam War protest and the Father Grappi and the civil rights protests that you know occurred here in the Capitol. There were tumultuous times, and so you know that's part of my political maturity was experiencing those events. But there had been not a lot of sort of emotional public protest in the years since the Vietnam War had ended and civil rights had passed. I mean, there were some very dramatic times, but we didn't see them as much in Wisconsin. So, you know, when we made the decision to leave for Illinois, it was because the process of democracy had been so abused mm-hmm. by trying to rush this through without any advance warning to the public, while they were denying the public ability to speak out on the legislation or to express their dissatisfaction with it. So we just hoped to be able to give some time for that to happen in hopes that cooler heads would prevail and that it just wouldn't be steamrolled through. It is true that on the day that we left, there were about 30,000 protesters on the Capitol grounds. I think that's about right, which was a huge number. But we had no idea, to tell you the truth, of the public outburst that occurred.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I think because we were in Illinois, we're somewhat insulated from the emotion that was occurring. We had to rely on family members back here on Capitol staff to let us know. The international press, of course, was all over it. It was quite interesting to be at the center of that kind of international press attention in trying to do it in a way that we could continue to do the work. Because while we were in Northern Illinois, we continued to be in touch with our constituents, we continued to be in touch with our legislative offices, but this issue had just taken over the entire state and, of course, the Capitol grounds.
Can you remember the day you all came back?
I'll never forget it.
That was amazing.
That was amazing.
One of the most. I'm getting chills right now remembering it. The outpouring of love and support as we came back. There would be people in the crowd reaching out to touch us with tears rolling down their face because of what the symbolism that the senators were for mm-hmm. their hopes and aspirations for a good life in the state and for being able to have a say in the future of their government. The senators got a lot of the attention, but you know you've got to remember what the assembly did during that time. And I'm going to, you know, Melissa perhaps can speak to it better, although she was not yet in the assembly. But the assembly debated the bill for 60 plus hours. They went through a tremendous personal privation in order to be able to be there. They countered some tricks to try and pass the bill, and so there was an inside-outside strategy that emerged to try and stop this bill and try to let cooler heads prevail.
And just for those of you joining us in midstream, we want to reset the show, remind you this is a public affair, and we're talking about here on the third anniversary of the uprising at the state capitol, the significance of that event, its resonance for today. Our guests in the studio are Representative Melissa Sargent and Senator Mark Miller. Welcome you to share your thoughts, your memories, your analysis, and to help us to brainstorm on what next steps might be. Because I think, Melissa, I'll put this to you. I mean, the dream isn't died. A lot of folks, the analysis was when June 6th, 2012 had passed and the recall had failed. In the conventional media, hey, it was, well, you guys gave it a good try, but it's kind of over. But I have a sense you probably don't believe that.
I don't believe that, or I couldn't wake up every morning and work as hard as I do to rebuild the state that I love. I will answer it with a little bit of a story. When I travel, I like to take a Wisconsin sweatshirt with me. And no matter where I am, you put on that Wisconsin sweatshirt and people say, oh, where are you from in Wisconsin? Oh, Madison, those lakes are beautiful, the Union, the Capitol, Door County. There's always a story about Wisconsin that makes people can associate with. And now when you travel, if you have that Wisconsin sweatshirt on, people kind of shake their head. They don't want to talk. And I want to get back to the time where I can go out and I can put my Wisconsin sweatshirt on no matter where I am and talk about what a great place it is that we live. And I have these four kids that deserve to be proud of where they come from, and we can get there.
You need to go to Lower Manhattan, and some of the protests that are still happening there, and wear a cheesehead and realize how popular a symbol that still is, at least in certain places. But
and I think the protests here in Wisconsin were a catalyst for the Occupy movement that occurred around the country. A recognition that you can stand up and make your voices heard. The effort in Ohio to recall similar anti-union legislation was successful. I think that if we had had that available here in Wisconsin, that we would have repealed that legislation by citizen initiative. We don't have it. The only thing we have here is the recall process to express your dissatisfaction with legislation. I certainly would like to see the ability for citizens to be able to initiate a repeal of onerous legislation.
Yeah. Well, even in a really a traditionally conservative state like Indiana, there were ripples of this revolution.
Yeah, and I've had a little bit of different experience than Melissa had in terms of people know that I'm from Wisconsin.
Yeah,
what people say to me is, what's happened to Wisconsin? Mm. You know, I've always thought of Wisconsin as a state with clean government, with good government, with progressive government that sort of leads the nation in. The new policies that are good for the rest of the country are good for Wisconsin, but you guys look like you've jumped into the dark ages with what's happened since Governor Walker's become your governor.
No, it's a hard message to be out there and to be thinking about. But Mark, do you have any thoughts though? You know, we've always been a purple state. We've always been a state that could go either way. And I think in some ways that's driven the passion of progressives in the state to make a difference. I mean, is that a factor that could come into play now?
Well, we have, I think, a couple of strands that are running. There is the progressive movement back in the earlier part of the last century that I think we as Wisconsinite, all take pride in as a state that really demonstrated how you could put the resources of the intellectual community, like the university and government, to be able to come up with progressive policies. You know, the idea behind the progressive income tax came out of the University of Wisconsin. We were the first state to have mandatory kindergarten. We were the first state to have workman's unemployment insurance. First state to have workman's compensation. And these became national policies out of Wisconsin. When we had a reputation for good, clean government, regardless of whether it was Republican or Democrat, that there was a respect for the democratic process and that respect for the institutions. Hardly fought. I mean, we fought very, very hard about the issues we felt for, but there was a respect for the process, and that has been lost here in the last 4 years.
I would imagine your mother, Midge Miller, she passed away in 2009, if I remember right. So this was before all of this had come down. But what was her memory and her legacy with you
Absolutely, John. I thought of her every day, frequently, because one of the things that she regretted is that she saw that our democratic institutions, our democratic ideals were being chewed away bit by bit, small bite by small bite by small bite, and that we would lose it, but we would one day wake up and realize that we had lost the ability to control our own destiny through the democratic process. And she said we need to have something to energize the people to realize what's happening. And so she would have been just ecstatic if she'd been here to see what was going on, and I felt like her presence was with me during that entire time in 2011. I wish she'd been here to see it.
as we reflect on the third anniversary of the uprising at the Wisconsin Capitol. You know, Melissa, you've reflected really well, I think, about your own experience and kind of your own getting fired up about the possibilities represented here. I mean, for me, it was, as a gay man, as someone who's been involved in civil rights struggles historically, I was seeing people in the small towns that I grew up in, you know, throughout Wisconsin, that were getting it maybe for the first time. There was this epiphany. They understood that sometimes government could be your friend, but sometimes in the wrong hands, government was something you had to demand accountability for if it was going to work. And, you know, those of us who've been, you know, out there protesting for decades, there was something neat about that common, ordinary person who never really would have thought of getting out there and being out there the way things were, that was really powerful. I mean, is that your experience too?
There were a lot of people that I believe woke up in the beginnings of spring of 2011, and they continue to be awake, and they are fatigued at the same time.
Yeah.
It's been very challenging to continue at such a pace, because there continues to be a lot of damage done to our state in and by the governor and the legislature. And it's hard to keep going when that is happening to something that you care so much about, and you have to go back and you have to reset. But we have a real opportunity right now to do that reset, and to remember what it was that made us be passionate in 2011, and why it is that we continue to care so deeply about our state. And, you know, we've got a great group of people in the Capitol, state senators, state representatives, and we cannot fail to remember all the staff people who were working in the Capitol during that time and continue to really hold it together and make sure that the people's voices are heard and that they will be heard.
Yeah, and I wonder if part of the dilemma here is finding a way to reframe things. When things are defined in the course of an election, again, an election that was extraordinary, recalls don't happen that often. And, you know, as far, and the notion that it was a landslide, you know, on the other side, it was 53-48. I mean, it wasn't, it wasn't a squeaker, but on the other hand, it was a lot of folks who believed strongly enough to do this extraordinary thing. But still, having said that, you know, what strikes me is I think the importance of what happened as being part of a movement, and movements being something that in some ways are more like glaciers than they are avalanches or whatever the parallel is here. I mean, they're things that take time and perseverance and that build up in ways that we're not even aware of and then break the surface. But I mean, anyway, I wish in some ways that we could take some of those powers that be that try to define this as just a simple matter of win, lost, and now it's over, and understand that something happened here that hasn't gone away.
This isn't a blip on a radar screen. It is not. I love the analogy of the glacier. I'm not by nature a very patient person. You can ask my kids that question and they'll be like, nope, yeah, she's not patient. but that's something that government requires, is patience. And good, clean government takes time. You know, the introduction of a bill, the shopping around of co-sponsors, the communications at committee level with stakeholders and constituents, and bringing everyone to the table, whether they agree or disagree, in trying to make it better and stronger so that you can move forward. And that's something that hasn't been happening in Wisconsin effectively. We need to be able to sit down at a table and have hard conversations with one another, whether we voted for the same president or governor or not, because most of the legislation that goes through the state has people from both sides that sign on. But when you totally marginalize and dismiss a whole party from the process, that is not healthy.
Yeah.
And we need to have more people that are elected that really value that collaborative, communicative process of bringing people together. And I'm new at this. I never would have imagined in 2011 when this all started that I would be working in the Capitol representing the people of Wisconsin. And it is such a responsibility and such an honor. And I am dedicated to having those conversations and changing what is happening here.
Mark, you know, I You're right. We're similar generations. At 54, I was in elementary school in the Vietnam War, so I can't claim all of that. But you know, for me, actually, this show has just been such an opportunity to gain an historical perspective that really energizes me. And so last year, you know, in 2013, when we were in the 50th anniversary of so many of these historic developments in the Black Civil Rights Movement, including the March on Washington, to talk to folks who were at that original march, to see how they were empowered and how they went forth from that day and just did incredible things over years and decades, just kind of reminds me that an event like this has a ripple effect that maybe we can't even see right now.
Well, you know, John, it's interesting you should make the comparison, because there's no question that there those of us who participated as young people in the anti-war movement and in the women's movement and the civil rights movement, those struggles have stuck with us, and our passion and commitment to those senses of equality for all have been a defining part, I think, of our generation and have inspired the generations that follow. And I think that this experience will have that same kind of an effect on young people that experienced it. And we've already seen young people running for office and being elected, like Melissa here, that is a direct outgrowth of that protest movement of 2011-2012. We will see more of that. But the movement's a little bit more diverse because there are so many issues in which the current administration is an antithesis to what many of us feel. I mean, we believe in investment in public education. We believe in a woman's right to be able to make medical decisions without interference from government. We believe in the democratic process, is that there's a give and take that needs to be done and not being dictated to by an economic oligarchy. And so, you know, the sense of the importance of our democracy and the threat that it's under right now, there's a real threat to us being able to use our democratic institutions to govern ourselves, that unless we stand up to it now and with passion and with commitment to the long haul, we could lose that precious thing that we have in democratic governance.
And I think there's a double-edged sword as those opponents of so many of the things that progressive folks hope to work for, as it surfaced, you know, how deeply enmeshed, how their power and their money, their resources were so thoroughly invested in this that was discouraging. It's a hard thing when you lose a recall and the other things, to think that they can prevail, in the short term. But on the other hand, I think it was really important for people to realize that, to learn about ALEC, to learn about the larger agenda, the people at work here. I mean, is that important too? As painful as that lesson was?
Well, I think you're right. I think a lot of people have recognized that there are forces at work that are undermining democracy, very powerful economic forces that want to see small government when it comes to regulating business, but who are perfectly happy to have big government when it comes to impact on our personal lives. And so individual freedom is paramount. We are a democracy. You know, in a democracy, we should be able to determine our own future. It should not be determined for us by an economic oligarchy such as we're under threat of right now.
All right. Give me a chance to respond to that in just a second, but we do have a caller on the line. Caller, your comment or question for our guest, please.
Hi, my name is Kiara, and I'm just calling because I've been filled with a lot of emotion just listening to the discussion about some of the memories during those protest days, and I wanted to share some of my own memories. One was the day that the senators fled. Our family was down at the Capitol, and I remember being down in the rotunda and my husband and I kind of elbowing each other because we saw a few, probably several altogether, of these senators whose face at the time we recognized with a specific name, and we just kind of elbowed each other. And then later we went to a local restaurant off the square to sort of break up the day to get a drink and some cheese curds. And we remember seeing just a short time later on the news, on the TV, that the senators had fled, and there was just this huge applause in this very packed restaurant. And something else I think about during that time was we had a son who had just turned three, and perhaps much like Melissa with her kids, we just were so proud of the role that our little kid played during those protests and the endurance that he showed. He never whined. We spent entire days there, and he would wake up and say, okay, I got my sweatshirt. Are we going down to the protest again today? And then finally, the last big memory that I have of that time is on February 24th, which happens to be our wedding anniversary, and we had been married in the assembly parlor at the Capitol building. We thought it was fitting to camp out that night at the Capitol, and we got a spot with her son as close as they were allowing people near the assembly parlor to sort of be settled down. And that was a very emotional evening as well, because while we knew the debate was going on, we had no idea that on that special day for us camped out there that that vote would be finalized. And anyway, I'm just filled with a lot of emotion remembering those days. And, you know, the one good thing that came out of it, I think, for a lot of Wisconsinites is that political awareness and then the determination to stand up to some more of those threats that Senator Miller just mentioned. So thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for your thoughts. One of the things that Kiara is commenting on is this feeling of the Capitol as our home, as a place. You know, part of it is if you live in Madison, you walk through that place all the time. It's the place that you take visitors. It's as she mentioned, you know, it's a place where a lot of folks were married, or it has some significance in terms of a significant relationship. Did you realize that ahead of time, Melissa, or was there some special appreciation that came as this sense of community developed, the folks who were camped out at the Capitol?
Well, the Capitol's always been very special to me. I grew up not too far away, and, you know, as I was growing up, I would take time away from my family, and the Capitol was my imaginary playhouse. I would take a walk up and spend time in the phone booths with the sliding doors when they used to have those, and look for the fossils in the walls.
Yep.
And it was always a special place for me, having been a kid that grew up in this community. And hearing that there were metal detectors being put in, and standing in line outside with Dave Obey, myself, shoulder to shoulder, and seeing the Reverend Jackson not be able to enter the Capitol, and to know that I had this infant on my body that had pants with snaps in them, and he would set off the metal detector every time, and they would have to take us aside and use a wand on us. You know, my goodness, this is a building that people cut through, as you mentioned. You know, it's part of our community, and I thought it was pretty neat when people started occupying it, and the drums, the bagpipes, the sleeping bags, the areas where food was set out. So there was a sense of safety for people that were there. And we were also there that same night as Kiara, which is interesting. My family and I slept in the Capitol that night and didn't have any idea that the vote was actually going to take place as it did. And that will forever be in my children's memories as well.
You, Mark, as folks share these memories of that community that was built and that sleepover, one of the other things that strikes me, I went out to New York a couple of years ago to speak about the social media and everything, and I think what people were more interested in was sort of this Midwestern ethos that surrounded it all, of Wisconsin nice and friendliness, and how did those all come together. One of my favorite videos was showing them the 89 women who were knitters and crocheters who had staged their own protest and things like that. But you know, is there something about Wisconsin, the Midwest, and how all this came together, how community intersected with organizing, that maybe the rest of the world might learn from?
Well, you know, I think we learned from the example of the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King and the importance of a peaceful protest, and from
in the beloved Mahatma community.
You know, in that the people who were protesting wanted the message to be about their dissatisfaction with the actions their government was taking, and did not want it to be distracted by any kind of violence. In fact, the biggest worry was was that maybe the provocateurs would show up to discredit the protesters. But they, fortunately, among the protesters were law enforcement officers who and others who made very sure there's anybody who indicated that they were not dedicated to the principle of peaceful protest, that they would not be allowed to disrupt and discredit the whole action that was being taken. And this brings me to a very important sequel, which is the importance of the Capitol Singers. The Capitol Singers, ever since the legislation passed, have every day, with the exception of the weekends and then when there's a conflict in the Capitol, staged a peaceful protest in the Capitol by singing songs that illustrate their dissatisfaction with what their government is doing. And the importance of this is that both our state constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution guarantee the right of protest, of peaceful protest, to petition your government for redress of perceived wrongs. And if you're not allowed to do it in the seat of government, where can you do it?
Yeah.
And I think this is being upheld by court decisions. The attempt to shut down the Capitol Singers has been discredited as an infringement on the fundamental rights of the people to be able to exercise their rights to seek redress from the government. And the important thing here is that by persevering and not allowing themselves to be cowed by a quelling of their voice, the singers have done a great service to the cause of democracy, to the cause of every single Wisconsinite, regardless of whether you're a conservative or a liberal, regardless of whether you agree with them or not, because at some point your issue will be one that you feel the need to protest, and they have stood up and identified and protected that right for all of us.
And this flies in the face of the naysayers and the blogosphere who say, you know, give it up, it's over. You know, what are you still doing there? I mean, there's still reason to be there, isn't there, Melissa?
There is still a reason to be there, and I find strength in the daily sing-along.
Yeah.
When I'm in a committee meeting and I can hear the singers in the rotunda, it's powerful. And I was there on the very first sing-along with my family, with my boys. And like I said, it was a lullaby to my youngest son. And it is buoying for those of us that are still there fighting and knowing that those citizens are playing their very important role in the protection of our constitutional rights to petition our government.
While Melissa and Mark are very articulate about bringing back some of those memories and other things, we do welcome your participation, your thoughts in this conversation. And we do have another caller on the line. Your comment or question, please.
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, good. I, too, applaud the Solidarity Singers. Their persistence and their patience has been wonderful. I understand that they are no longer being arrested, which I hope I'm correct about. But my bigger question is, I have a friend who recently was called upon to testify before the state legislature, and she was ordered to submit her comments in writing ahead of time to a group of people on behalf of Walker who are scrutinizing all testimony that comes before the legislature. They edited it. They insisted that she not say anything that was not on that pre-approved script. This is another infringement on the public expressing themselves to the legislature, and I wondered if Mark or your other guest could comment on that.
Thank you for that. It's not uncommon to request a written copy of the testimony that a person is about to provide. And the reason for that is so that they can be part of the official record. But it is, to me, this is the first I've ever heard of a person having to submit their testimony ahead of time and having it edited. The only reason that I can imagine that would happen would be is if you were testifying in favor of legislation that the governor or the majority wanted, and they wanted to make sure that you only talked about things that they wanted you to talk about. But boy, if that was done to somebody who was talking in opposition, that is a complete abridgment of any kind of democratic process. And I'd be shocked, just shocked, that somebody would do that. And if it did happen to somebody who was being in opposition to legislation or proposed legislation, that should become part of the public knowledge.
And it's so important if something like this does happen to go to the ACLU, Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, or to a legislative office. And
absolutely.
Let someone know about
this cannot be tolerated. And if it, when it happens, people need to stand up and insist on being able to voice their opinion.
Thoughts or questions about events here on this third anniversary of the uprising at the Wisconsin Capitol. Looking forward, we want to keep people fired up. We want to keep that energy going. But there are some realities here. Again, that glacier moves pretty slowly sometimes. But I think the way to frame this for folks to understand why it's been such a tough battle is to understand that the system is pretty profoundly broken. And one aspect of that is the gerrymandering that's occurred. And Melissa, you were giving me some pretty stark statistics that say that what gerrymandering, which means creating districts, you know, that that favor one party or another or favor incumbents, anyway, kind of drawing an artificial landscape. It means that then the people's will isn't always directly reflected. And could you kind of elaborate on where that's working right now?
So I'm really proud of the 14 freshmen that were elected in the assembly. I am one of them, and they are all fantastic people. And we all sat down at the beginning of our term and were passionate about the redistricting process that created these gerrymandered lines. And we put a piece of legislation out. It's our class piece of legislation that would ask that would require nonpartisan redistricting to occur in Wisconsin as it does in Iowa, because we know that when the people's voices are heard, it is only healthier for the legislative process. What happened during the last legislative cycle, there were nearly 180,000 votes cast more for Democrats in the state assembly than Republicans in the state assembly, yet the margin is 60-39. That is not representative government, and we need to make sure that the will of the people is heard. And when we're thinking about who's running for office next time, who we're going to elect next time, are they supportive of a nonpartisan redistricting process should be at the top of that list, because that is paramount to fixing what's happening here.
Or do you have any thoughts on it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Republicans in the restrictions that they've done on access to the polls have always said it's important to protect the integrity of the ballot. Well, the integrity of the ballot means is that when the people express their vote, is that that vote should be reflected in their representation. So the integrity of the ballot has been severely abused by this recent redistricting. I applaud the effort to go forward and put a nonpartisan, independent redistricting plan forward. It would still have to be approved by the legislature. So the language that, or the arguments against it, is that putting it up against some unelected body just doesn't fly, because the legislature would eventually have to do it. Mm. But the process by which you would do it would be an open and transparent process, not like what we experienced this last time. The Republicans, it needs to be done before the next redistricting. And the reason is, I mean, Republicans, if they are thinking, would embrace this now, mm-hmm. because 2020 is a presidential election.
In 2010 wasn't.
Which in 2010 skewed, was not.
Skewed things more toward a conservative
right.
gerrymandering.
Right.
Yeah.
In presidential elections, Democrats show out in greater numbers than they do in other elections. So the chances for the Republicans to maintain their majority after the 2020 election could be compromised. And if they would be to their advantage yeah. after that 2020 census to be able to be the beneficiaries of a nonpartisan redistricting, and the Democrats would be a beneficiary. But most importantly, the people of the state of Wisconsin yeah. would be the beneficiary.
And by and large, in places like Iowa where this has been tried, it's been much sea change, right?
It's worked wonderfully. And the thing is Iowa is another state that is pretty purple, just like Wisconsin
yeah.
is. And what you end up voting, what you end up electing, is people who have the ability to understand both sides of the issue, because they are representing constituents that are equally Republican or Democrat. What we have now with this severely gerrymandered district is basically extremists on the polls in both parties, and not very many opportunities to find that catalyst for compromise, which is important if you're going to do if you're going to govern in a democratic society.
We do have a couple of calls on the line. Caller, your comment, your question, please.
Yeah, hello, John.
Yes.
Yes, I have a comment. I hope you'll forgive me for being a little negative, but my question is this. I mean, this is a common mistake among progressive people to take an event that occurred in the past and then just keep remembering it and commemorating it. But my question is this. What has really come out of this occupation of the Capitol? I mean, Walker is still around. The Republicans are passing their repressive legislation unchecked. And I think for many people, the whole thing at the Capitol was just one big party where they could have a ball, you know, sleeping overnight in the state capitol. You know, it sounds very appealing, but I think that's all it was for most of the people. And there's really been very little lasting effect. Also, since you brought up redistricting, I think part of the problem is that the hard fact is that both parties are in favor of gerrymandering. It just depends on which party is in power, and then obviously the party that's out of power complains. And
with limited time, I just need to, when we get to both of those, Melissa, your thoughts on the first comment?
Well, I would say that a lot of people woke up, and there's nothing wrong with celebrating a historic day. We celebrate historic days all the time, and I would argue that there is a lot that has happened that has been good. I would hope that my election into the state assembly is good. I would hope that the fact that we've introduced nonpartisan redistricting, I would hope the fact that we've introduced domestic partnership and legal marriage equality, I would hope that many of the things that we have done we can see as positive. So let's celebrate some of that as well. And as far as redistricting, one of the things that we need to remember is that this is my freshman class bill. I was not there when the Democrats were in charge previously. So let's look to the forward.
Martin, you know, again, if you take this historical perspective, which I think is important, I don't know who would have guessed again on the March on Washington or even a year or two later all the things that would come out of that, all of the individual actions and the other things. I think I understand the caller's cynicism on some level, But you really have to have faith in the ability of people to take a stand and make a difference, don't you?
Well, you know, we got the Midwestern ethic here in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and we believe in fairness. I mean, that's a basic fundamental if you're a Republican or Democrat. And I count on that. I mean, I have faith in the democratic process that if we have a process that allows our basic good sense and our basic sense of fairness to come to the fore, is that we will return to being a state that looks out after all its citizens, not just an elite few.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the college analysis, again, unfortunately, it resonates with the folks who opposed this movement. And you know, they want us to feel defeated. They want us to interpret this in the worst way possible. They want to keep us down. But, you know, the fact that they outspent by 8 or 9 to 1 and all these other things are significant. The playing field wasn't level. So the distance that was made, the accomplishments, you know, are important, aren't they?
Well, and the money differential has really become an important issue.
Yeah.
Is that what we need as citizens to recognize is that our vote is ours and we should not allow it to be subverted by money.
All right. We do have another caller. Is that right? Caller, your comment, your question, please, realizing we've got limited time.
Okay. I'd like to say that the guests should be very grateful for the forum they have today. It's only at Wart that we have the context and the real freedom to discuss the kinds of things they're discussing today. I really think that when they're on you know, commercial media, and in my classification, that includes the state stations, that they don't have the freedom and they don't have the progressive context in which to say the things they're saying today. So I think that they really should give a big thank you to Wart.
Wart is fabulous. I grew up in Madison listening to Wart, and my family's always been very supportive of it. So we are thankful that Wart is part of our community.
Totally unsolicited, and we thank you for that. Just a couple minutes left, and one of the things you mentioned before we went on the air, talking about pieces of legislation moving forward, something near and dear to my own heart is, of course, turning back some of the regressive things that have happened in terms of LGBT rights. And you have some legislation you're working on in that regard.
It was very exciting, actually, last week. on Thursday, the Senate and Assembly Democrats stood shoulder to shoulder with the leadership of Senator Carpenter and Representative Zamarripa to introduce equality for marriage in Wisconsin. And it's about time. And these are the types of things that we need to do. So it doesn't show that we're always fighting against what's happening with the conservative leadership that we have, but we are able to paint the picture of what it is that we care about deeply.
Mark, this is a horrible thing to do with a minute and 30, but I'm going to let you close out. And just, you could reflect on it, since we're talking about an issue that you've so eloquently described as resonant with your own family situation, being part of an interracial marriage at a time of the Loving Decision.
My wife and I were married in 1968, yeah. And my wife's of Japanese ancestry. I was stationed in the Air Force at the time, and I was stationed in Selma, Alabama. Alabama's constitution prohibited interracial marriage, and the Loving Decision had occurred just 2 years prior, which said they couldn't enforce that prohibition. But when they did, they would actually take children away from the families with of interracial marriage. And the thing was, it took 25 years for Alabama to repeal it. In Wisconsin, I don't think that's the case, because public opinion has already shifted to where the majority of Wisconsinites want to have marriage equality.
So you've seen how far we've come from that time, in just these last few seconds. Your thoughts on where we could be 10 years from now?
Well, I am hoping that in terms of marriage equality, it'll be a lot less than 10 years from now. I think the momentum has definitely shifted on that issue, and it is only the people who can't see the future who are still hanging on to that.
Melissa, what will the Capitol look like 10 years from now? Sorry, about 20 seconds to describe.
I think that Citizens United will be pushed to the side, that the people's voices will be valued and heard, and that we will have a fair and just government that values the citizens over the lobbyists and big money.
Representative Melissa Sargent, Senator Mark Miller, thank you. You've really helped us to put this day in perspective.
Thank you, John.
Give us some hope as we move ahead. This has been A Public Affair. Have a good week.